Yes, a very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your Yarning Circle, the Murray Grapevine. It is National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trinity Trev Murray from the Curry. Coming to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your dingy country as BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Radio Service. You can have your saber calling from that daily number, 1-800-422-416. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land where we broadcast from, to all our traditional owners across this beautiful country. As welcome back, National Talk Black. Have you say, and yarn up strong, you mob. We're going to jump straight in. And almost 200,000 Australians don't have safe drinking water, new report finds. So almost 200,000 Australians are often forced to drink water containing unsafe levels of uranium, arsenic and nitrates, fluoride and E. coli, according to the peak body for water suppliers. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Adam Lovell, Executive Director, Water Services Association of Australia. A very good morning, Adam. How are you?
I'm very good, Trevor. It's really good to be with you.
Yeah, good to be yarning with you. Thank you very much. Here we are in the 21st century, and we're talking about 200,000 Australians don't have safe drinking water. That's devastating in that sense, isn't it?
It is. We believe that every Australian community should have access to clean, safe drinking water that meets the Australian drinking water guidelines, just wherever you are in the country.
Exactly.
You know, there's no doubt there's big challenges to achieve that. But it should be the goal, right?
And what is the cause of this problem as such, Adam, please?
Most of the time, particularly for say uranium, arsenic, fluoride, nitrate, they're naturally occurring chemicals, so they come up through the bores, through the groundwater.
Yes.
But in most respects, they're treatable. So there's technologies that you can put in place to manage them.
Mm-hmm.
For E. coli is what you call a marker for pathogens. So, you know, the microorganisms that might give you gastrointestinal disease or you know, skin problems, that sort of thing. So in terms of your everyday, it's your microbiological contaminants you're most worried about. So you want to make sure that the water's chlorinated or at least disinfected, and that keeps you healthy day to day. When you're looking at uranium or arsenic, fluoride, they're long-term impacts. They happen over a much longer term. The Australian drinking water guidelines have a lot of safety factors built into that, so they're very conservative. But still, you don't want your water to be over those guidelines. You know, that's the goal.
So what can the government do here to, give safe drinking water to the 200,000 Australians we're talking about?
Yeah, and look, there's a few things you can do. We've just been, I'm in Alice Springs at the moment. We've just had a major conference, national conference. We've had great speeches from Senator Malandiri McCarthy, who's the Assistant Minister for Indigenous Affairs. We had Minister Plibersek as the Minister for Water. We've had some great speeches. They're right behind support here. They've got their attention turned to it, put it that way. But there's a couple of things we need to do, I think. We need to close the gap. We need to know what the gap is. And we don't know at the minute. So if you're living, even in Cairns, in sort of central Cairns, you'll there's sort of regular water testing that happens from, but there's many, many communities across the, particularly across the top end, that probably have never had their water tested. So we don't even know.
Yeah.
So we need to establish what that gap is. So we're suggesting a national monitoring campaign program supported by the federal government and with transparent reporting, right? So we all know where we're starting and we all know what the gap is that we need to build across.
Mm.
The other thing is, which I think the federal government could certainly help with, is expanding what the National Water Grid funding was intended to do. So expanding that to First Nations communities to make sure that the right treatment is in place, so the right infrastructure is in place so they do get clean, safe drinking water.
And where are we sitting in regard to water in this country? Is scarce? Are we looking at the future could be dangerous for human beings as such?
It is scarce. Look, there's no doubt about it. I've been out to see some of the communities here around Alice Springs, and the bore fields are moving further and further away from the communities, and that's hard. You know, the water is harder to locate, and that makes it really difficult to, and when you add climate change on top of that,
exactly.
You know, water security is a really top issue, and we need to sort of turn our mind to that just as much as we need to have our mind turned to water quality. The two to go together. So, you know, it's part of that. Part of the funding that I think that the federal government could help with would be to help look for new sources of water or assess what we could do with the current water that we have. A lot of communities are really mindful of the water that they're using, which is a great thing.
Yes.
And I think that a lot more could happen. There's a lot more that we could work with communities to really understand their water use and to help with demand management so they can use water for other uses. Be it swimming pools or growing or for orchards or something like that. So maximising the best use of the water that's available, I think.
Exactly. We can all do our bit, can't we, Adam?
Everybody can do their bit. But, I just wanted to mention, Trevor, that everybody at the conference, there's a real mood for change. There's a real momentum for change. People came away from that, wanting to make sure that First Nations communities are really empowered on decisions around water.
Yes.
Because it hasn't happened so well in the past. But we've just got to be honest about that. So empowering First Nations communities to make those water decisions, be part of it. And when people are part of it, then they feel like they own it.
Mm.
So if you feel like you're owning your water supply, then you're going to be really, really mindful of the way you're using it. Best use of it,
exactly. Ownership,
Exactly.
And look, here we live on the big island. There's water all around us. Is there machinery out there that can change salt water into fresh water?
There is, and that's a lot of the groundwater that certainly for inland communities, a lot of the groundwater is quite salty.
Mm.
So there are definitely technologies. Reverse osmosis is the go-to for seawater desalination. You might not need that for every sort of situation in inland communities, but there are other technologies like reverse osmosis that can help remove the salt.
Yes.
It's definitely a bit more trickier to use. So you've got to have you've got to be able to sort of have the skills and the capability to make sure that you can maintain it. So you can put the technology in, but it's really important that we've got to be able to maintain it. They all have chemical use, they'll all have energy use, but that can be done by solar as well, or solar can at least assist.
Yes.
So thinking differently about the technology that's used, the way it's powered, the way it's used on the community, always got to make sure it's disinfected. And I think because the knock-on effect, Trevor, is that, if people's air conditioning is getting blocked up by calcium build-up, or if their taps are getting, sort of built up with calcium as well, you want all your health hardware in the house to be working well as well,
exactly.
Because that impacts the general health of the community as well. So everything interconnects, where you get your water from, the water quality that's delivered, the way you use the water, how hard it is, the aesthetics,
exactly.
As we say.
And you said the individual, the person living at home, with a leaking tap, so to speak, well, that's wasting pure liquid, isn't it?
That's right. And water is life. Water
exactly.
is so precious. And so, being ready to ask for help. If your tap is leaking, ask for help. Get it fixed. Every drop counts.
Mm.
Every drop counts. Wherever you are in this country, every drop counts.
Yes.
And just sort of seeking help to get the tap fixed. I think that's one of the things, or a leaky toilet or a leaky shower, all of the drops count.
Well, it's great to hear that you had a conference there, a very successful conference, I'm picking up, Adam.
It was a fantastic conference. As I said, there is real mood for change. The early support from the federal government has been great. They've definitely turned their mind to this. But it will take a giant collaboration. It will take everybody. It will take the industry. It takes the industry to really engage and sit back and listen to First Nations communities about their water use. It'll also take researchers. It'll take technology providers. Everybody needs to help. I just want to shout out to, there's a lot of operators out there that are really trying their very best to deliver great water services. It's not without, that there's a great intent out there. Things have not gone as efficiently as they could. Now's you know, we're just saying, let's shine a light on this. Let's do the better than what we've been doing.
Fantastic. Just want a quick question regarding the Mother Nature. When it rains, like we had the floods, sad for people losing houses and what have you and lives.
Yeah.
But that's gold coming down from the sky, is it not?
It is, and there's probably better ways of capturing it. You know, it's just so different across the country. What I would say is, there's options to use rainwater tanks. For instance, there could be community-sized ones, household ones. Being able to use that, but then treating that water as precious, you know, like really, really making sure that you're using every drop wisely is a really key thing. And I think there's also chances, I think, in the future about water recycling as well. So what could you do with water recycling, for instance, particularly for sort of orchards or for lawns?
Yeah, plants,
gardens. If people want green grass for recreation,
sure.
You know, you've got to be careful about that, of course, because if you're recycling something, it's obviously got to be treated to the right health standards. Mm. But there's no reason in the future, with the right safeguards, with the right skills and training, that communities couldn't manage that into the future. But again, you've got to be really, really careful about the health impacts of that. And I think that's what health regulators are really mindful of, that you don't want people getting sick from using water recycling as well.
And with your organisation, and you head up the Water Services Association of Australia, is there like a promotion, marketing, educational tools out there that you guys are using for all Australians to pick up and bide by?
Yeah, look, we've got the Smart Water Advice Program, which actually helps communities, helps householders, wherever you are. You know, it gives you great tips for around the home for being water efficient, and I think that's a fantastic tool. That's specifically built for people to understand how they can use water most efficiently around the home. So you know, I'll be happy to provide our web address, and people can look us up. But many of the councils too, like Cairns Regional Council and many other councils around the country, Powerwater here in the Northern Territory do a fantastic job with their demand management program. I'm sure they'd say, yeah, we'd love to do even more. And we know that communities here in the Central Land Council want to do more as well. So right across the country, people want to do more. They want to be able to save water, use water really efficiently. Most of your councils or your utilities on their websites will have fantastic tips.
Okay.
We do as well. You know, there's plenty of information out there.
Fantastic. Adam, thank you very much for sharing. All the best, and we'll talk soon, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Great to chat to you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Deadly Young there. Adam Lovell, his name is, Executive Director, Water Services Association of Australia. And the headline there is, almost 200,000 Australians don't have safe drinking water. That's a new report find. So they've just finished a conference there in Alice Springs, talking about water, of course, and that's what it's all about, you know. It is precious liquid, and we need to conserve it and look after it. So message going to all that mob there, just be careful of your water, whether it be leaking tap, or just don't waste water. And like I said, it is precious liquid, and it keeps us alive. That's what it's all about. So stay tuned, you mob. Add to the conversation here, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
From the palm of our mother's hands, mucham yinan bading Allah, gari gari galing Allah, gadam gadam gari gari. It is our dignity.
our people. They were taken away from their homeland. They were forced to be removed by the color of their skin. We are the stolen generation. Booty booty dandy dandy gada. Wow, gadi gadi.
Yeah. My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416. Yogan Gagiwala Nungung Yiwala Mulangmai. Yogan Gagiwala Nungung Yiwala Mulangmai. Yogan Gagiwala.
Start making some changes. Let's change the way we eat, let's change the way we live, and let's change the way we treat each other. You see, the old way wasn't working, and so it's on us to do what we gotta do to survive. I hope I see more changes, and I believe we can overcome if we all come together as one, make it better for our sons and our daughters being brought up in this harsh world. Yeah, it's hard, but we can't turn backwards. Put your faith into practice, escape from the cage you've been trapped in, and free yourself. Impossible alone, so I need your help. For the youth to improve, we gotta teach them well. Cause racism isn't born, it's all talk the talk, then you walk the walk. The ability for change is within you. Let's put aside our pride and try to face all these issues. People operate the easy way, cause it's easier to hate than to say that you made a mistake. But be real, and together we can heal and rebuild. But if we don't, let's wait.
Yeah, beautiful track there. Changes Like a Version, JK47, here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say and yarn up strong. Give me a call, 1-800-422-416. Call that number, yarn with yours truly, Trevor Sim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns in Yidinji country, BBM Bumbabrip Media, 90.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Indigenous Radio Service. All right, now, CASNAM, that's the Congress of Congress, Aboriginal, Torres Strait Islander Nurses and Midwives, 25th Anniversary National Conference 2022, celebrating this year, 25 years, and fantastic. It's a beautiful organisation that looks after our black nurses and midwives, and we've been having deadly yarns with our deadly nurses and midwives, and retiree nurses and midwives as well, and black at that, about that beautiful space, and looking after, well, human beings as well as our mob. We are human beings, are we not? Beautiful platform they're using there is Get 'em, Keep 'em, and Growing 'em. Genki, and Genki 2, and Strategies for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Nurses and Midwifery Education Reform. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Ali Drummond, CASNAM National Director, Education and Practice, on the line. Ali, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor. Nice to be here.
Fantastic. Great to have you here. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Before we start, Balali, can you give us your mob? Who your mob? Where you from, my brother?
Thanks, Will. I grew up on TI there on Waibini, on Kauri country. My mob are the Miriam Dauri people of the West Eastern Island, rather, of the Torres Straits, and the Woodley people of Cape York. Connections elsewhere, as we do.
Yes.
But they're the main ones, yeah.
Beautiful, fantastic. Thank you very much. Beautiful footprint. Big shout out there to the mob there, TSI. Or my family there, we're Darnley Island, Europe. And the Sailor Pit Mob. So, look, connection there, my brother. Thank you very much. Looking at this fantastic program, Get 'em, Keep 'em, and Growing 'em, Genki, look, a powerful and well needed platform to have black nurses and midwives to succeed, yes?
Yeah, and an essential one, too. So, this, Genki or Genki 2 is the second iteration of a bunch of strategies that Katsunam developed back in 2002. So we had when Katsun was first established back in the 1997, a bunch of Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander nurses and midwives got together and said, hey, we needed to make a whole heap of changes here in how we educate and how we support our young ones, because we were getting reports of racism and all sorts of ways in which racism was impacting on our mob.
It deterred our mob from continuing on or to be qualified in that profession, the racism and all that sort of stuff. So you needed a platform as such, didn't you?
That's right. That's right. And I think with establishing the body of Katsunam, it then gave us, I guess, the vehicle then and a voice, a collective voice, to push back. So Genki 2 is about revisiting those old strategies, seeing what didn't work in the last 20 years since we've had getting them and keeping them, and saying, well, this is what we need to do to make it effective moving forward. Because what we've seen in the last 20 years is very little change in the proportion of Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander nurses and midwives. So our numbers have increased, but the numbers of non-Indigenous nurses and midwives also increased. So we're still not at parity, because usually we aim for, you know, that 3% of everything, 3% of participation within the different workforce. That's what we're aiming for here, and actually to outdo that. But we've stayed around 1.4%, which is telling us we need to do things differently.
And so we need platforms like Genki, to create that strong foundation for our black nurses and midwives to succeed on.
Yes, that's right. So Genki 2 provides a plan for Katsunam to work with the power brokers, with people with power in the discipline, in nursing midwifery, but also with the government. So a key recommendation from Genki 2 is working in partnerships with the accreditation body for nursing midwifery, so the Nursing Midwifery Board of Australia. Key partnerships with the accreditation body for undergraduate nursing programs, partnerships with the Australian government, so the department. And so what we're asking for is genuine partnerships where
that's a powerful word, exactly.
Where Katsunam has power to make decisions and to hold the discipline, also the government, to account, to make sure that we actually are implementing. And we see this problem with everything that we put forward in Indigenous health, but also broadly with Indigenous self-determination and sovereignties, that all these great reports are written, but the follow-through, the implementation fails. And so what we aim to do with this next step is making sure that we put in measures where people are accountable to us.
Exactly.
We can say, oh, well, we've done this right, or we need to work harder in these areas.
And when you look at here we are in the 21st century, here we are still going through COVID, and the world is screaming out for nurses, midwives, and here we have this black space, and then racism still at the table, which stinks in the 21st century.
Yeah, well... and I think that really shows, I think, sometimes organisations like health services or the discipline can be very superficial. You know, they'll find their reconciliation action plan and they'll say the right things, but when the rubber hits the road...
The action's not there.
The action's not there.
Exactly, ticking the boxes.
Global pandemic, where we want them to, you know, they can invest in Indigenous health while addressing COVID, you know, the COVID needs as well. But, you know, sometimes things that aren't seen as important to them sort of drop off the table. And so we're here to remind them that this work that we do is as important and not separate from the response to COVID. And we see that in how Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander workforces and health services have responded well to the COVID, the COVID pandemic within our communities.
Exactly. And now Castanam are celebrating 25 years anniversary. I believe they had the conference 19th of August, is that correct?
That is correct. So it's next week. We've been busy working and planning to make sure that's a big celebration.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And having the so-called joint ventures, the partners, so to speak, at the table in the celebration, but also nurses and midwives. So, of course, CASNAM's a conference, a national conference and a national body, peak body. Are we having black nurses and midwives from around the country come in to celebrate as well?
Oh, definitely, yes. I was just actually talking to a colleague, the Aboriginal colleague, the other day, and we were sort of comparing the different conferences of the different disciplines, and we were just noting how CATSNM conferences, and no offence to our colleagues in medicine and allied health, but they say CATSNM conferences are black.
a black celebration.
Proper. So we'll have current Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nurses and midwives, we'll have students, but also we'll have the retired Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nurses and midwives as well, because we'll be celebrating them
for paving the way.
For paving the way, exactly.
Exactly, beautiful. And look, hats off to the beautiful retired nurses and midwives, because we've had conversations on this program since the announcement of the 25th anniversary national conference. So a big shout out and thank the CASNAM organisation to allow this to happen and to shed light on the work that you guys are doing. And good yarn with you, Ali, my brother. Are you a nurse, midwife yourself?
I'm a nurse. I've been nursing for a while. I think it's been 15 years. Yeah.
15 years. Yeah. Too deadly. So where are you based at the moment in your job?
So I work with CATSNM in this this national role. But prior to this, I worked in academia. So I was in Brisbane, and I worked as a lecturer there at QUT in School of Nursing.
Beautiful.
But I've been all over the place. This is the privilege of working in nursing. You get to work in clinical, you can work in policy, you can teach. So there's lots of opportunities for any young people thinking about a career.
And you've virtually, in a way, stepped away from nursing, but you're in the vehicle that's driving this platform to support and guide our black nurses and midwives into their success. So you've got to have a smile on your doll about that, my brother.
Oh, definitely. And it's hard work, but it's very rewarding.
Yeah,
and I look forward to the conferences so we can actually celebrate these things together.
Yeah, too, Dylan. A big shout out to my beautiful cousin. That's our cousin, Professor Roy Ann West, doing a fantastic job. And good yarning with you, Bala Ali, and big shout out to the CASNAM team. Keep doing what you're doing, and we'll be in touch, my friend.
Thanks so much, Bala.
Yes, sir, Bala. Yawo.
Yawo, it.
Beautiful yarn there. Ali Drummond, CASNAM National Director, Education and Practice, and talking about the get 'em, keep 'em, and growing 'em. That's Genki too. Strategies for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Nurses and Midwifery Education Reform. And their purpose is to lead Australia's nursing and midwifery professions through collaborative processes to improve education, health and employment outcomes for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, and particularly the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nurses and midwifery workforce. The milestone achieves achievements that are being platformed and celebrated at the 2022 CASNAM conference are testaments of their commitment to privileging the people's self-determination, sovereignty in the context of optimism in healthcare, particularly in the nursing and midwifery workforce, to better serve Australia, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. Also to sophisticate their approaches in eradicating racism, champion cultural safety, and investing in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' ways of knowing, being and doing relevant to nursing and midwifery care. And their work aligns with key national Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health policies. including the National Agreement on Closing the Gap, the Australian Government's National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Health Plan, and the Australian Government's National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Health Workforce Strategy Framework and Implementation Plan 2021 to 2031. So still a lot of work to be done, but they're leading the way in that field and protecting all our beautiful black nurses and midwives. Have your say in Yarn Up Strong here, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
This is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416. 416.
Yeah, to Daily Mob, welcome back to your Yarning Circle, the Murray Grapevine, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. Coming to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your Dingy Country, BBM Bumba Bripa Media, 90.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. All right, so we do have the third National Indigenous NDIS Allied Health, Mental Health and Suicide Prevention Conference happening in Cairns next week. We're going to talk to the organiser, CEO Indigenous Conference Services. That's Thomas Callaghan on the line. Brother Thomas, good morning. How are you?
I'm pretty good, brother. How is yourself?
I'm good, my brother. Before we start, let the mob know who you mob. Where you from, Thomas?
Okay. We're called, our business is called Indigenous Conference Services.
Mm.
We organise, obviously, First Nations and Indigenous conferences around the world. But I'm a verified Dungati man from Kempsey, but we've just opened a new office in Cairns and going great guns.
Yeah, beautiful, fantastic. Yep, I'm coming to heaven up this way. Thank you very much. And looking at conferences, and that's your business, Indigenous Conference Services. In the last couple of years, thanks to COVID-19, been a bit of a struggle with a lot of people in all different industries. Did you find the same thing as well in your profession?
Yeah, in fact, we've been going 35 years up to when COVID
first beautiful.
Hit.
Yep.
Put everything into sort of mothballs because we deal with a lot of remote communities where, as people know, the internet is a not one of the most reliable services in the world.
Yes.
And we couldn't get signals into some communities and all that. So I had an enforced holiday, which was well-deserved, I might say. But,
yep, good.
Depends who you ask about that.
But, well, you could recharge your batteries. That's what you did. Had time to do it.
In fact, so much so, we were that keen to get back into it. We expanded the business threefold, which is no mean feat because we were quite large before. We'd done most of the large conferences around Australia and New Zealand and in Canada. But now we're reopened and organising new staff, even new offices. We've still got our head office in Harvey Bay.
Okay, yep.
But now we're also in Cairns, and I think we're going to make sure that, or transfer most of the stuff over to the Cairns. Logistical reasons more than anything. And
yep.
Cairns is a great place to live anyway.
Yeah, beautiful. Of course it is. And we do have a lot of conferences up here, First Nation conferences, and is a beautiful platform. With your organisation, your company, Indigenous Conference Services, so how many Indigenous conferences do you run a year?
We run between 10 and 30 conferences a year.
Okay.
We're that busy that we usually run two, sometimes three conferences within the 1 week in the one motel or location.
Yep.
Because of time, ease of travel, and all that type stuff. So it's, we're even opening a mainstream side of the business now, which is all about, we specialise in domestic violence, the community-based issues.
Yes.
So the NGO side of it, the non-government side of it, we're setting up a whole new office for there.
Fantastic. I mean, your National Indigenous Conference happening next week here, NDIS, Allied Health and Mental Health and Suicide Prevention, that's happening next week. Who are the conference aimed at?
Okay. There are four separate conferences, but because of COVID, we've sort of brought them all into one, we'll be running four workshops at a time. The youth suicide and mental health is their basic standalone conferences by themselves. However, some of the issues cross over, so the two mental health and the suicide conference will be able to come together as one large conference. fall apart at a day. The NDIS and I'm going blank at the other one now. The chronic disease is will be done the same way, and at stages, all four groups will come together into one.
Which is working smarter, not harder. Four-pronged spear is what I'm picking up, brother.
The ability to do it like this. It's a bit of an experiment, plus it's, I think, for a lot of conference organisers, whether you be First Nations, mainstream, Chinese, no matter where you are, I think conferences will end up going like that.
Exactly.
Simply because the industry needs to adapt to the new way, and it has great benefits for our participants because they can get to go to any, if there's one subject interest or subject matter on the agenda what doesn't appeal to them, they have a choice of going to two or three other keynote speakers in other rooms. So it's going to be challenging being the first real time we've tried this.
Sure.
Been forced into it, whatever word you'd like to use.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be also very exciting, and it'll be, I believe, the way of the future, where if you go to a conference, it won't be just one. There'll be other ones what you'll be able to tap into while you're there.
Exactly.
Giving the participants more...
Well, we all intertwine, don't we? We sort of...
Variety. And also making it more cost-effective for organisations for their registrations and travel and all that type of stuff.
Exactly. Thomas, can you hear me there? No, Thomas can't hear me. Look, Thomas, thank you. Thomas Callaghan, CEO, Indigenous Conference Services, and we're just talking about the up-and-coming National Indigenous Conference happening here in Cairns at the Hilton Hotel, August 15, 17, and that's the NDIS, Allied Health, Mental Health and Suicide Prevention. Four-pronged spear, as we were conversing there, having four different organisations in the one conference, which is a smart move, you could say, a smorgasbord of information and colleagues, and we all do entwine and have beautiful conversations anyway, joint ventures and all that sort of stuff. So it's just a great idea, a great concept. And Thomas Callaghan is the CEO of Indigenous Conference Services, has been sitting on the fence for the last 2 years thanks to COVID-19, but back into it now, and opened up an office here in Cairns. His head office down there, Sunshine Coast, but opened up here in Cairns, which is a fantastic place for conferences, and that's why he thought he'd do that move up this way, and I know that he's organised a lot of conferences up here. But good to be yarning with him, and look, it's come to the time where Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry signs off for today's program. Back in the hot seat again on Monday, you mob, and thank you very much for your company. Look, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong, and we'll be yarning soon. Too deadly.